Copy, shift box.
Okay, radio check. Yeah, radio's working fine.
Yeah, call your personnel.
Yeah, copy, mate.
The chair in the vent bag.
Yeah, stitcher up there. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, right, copy that.
Boys, what a bloody good day to be an Australian. Travis Head just absolutely tore the Indians a new asshole. 137, I think he got. Go the Aussies. What a great day. I reckon 1, 2, 3. Once a jolly swagman camped by a billabong under the shade of a coolabah tree.
Mate, you'd have pep in your step this morning.
Oh, mate, I was going to rip Maccabi Diva men's 4x100 relay Sydney Olympics on YouTube last night. I was pumped. I was ready to go on a bender.
How long did it take to get to sleep because your heart rate was just bloody going
up? Yeah, I won't allude to that. Anyway, good times. Congratulations to the Australian cricket team. Boys, back to mining.
Back to mining, mate.
Back to mining. Today we get into Spartan and Peninsula capital raises. They were news. Oh, Peninsula was. No, they were both last week. Glencore's lithium offtake deals with Gallon and Tantalex. What else? Oh, we had a visitor today. Gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Gallon. Is this Todd Milan or Todd Milan?
Either Milan or Malin, depending on which way you
Gallon,
want to
Galen,
butcher it.
God. Anyway, Todd, come in quickly to clarify a bit of our reporting on about a US free trade agreement with Indonesia that we saw in the news the other week. So he come in, he flew over just to see us.
Just
so
for that.
Cheers for that, Todd.
Cheers, Todd.
And Trav, you had a bit of a good in-depth listen to the MinRes AGM the other day.
Did plenty of info in that one, but I've got a highlight for the money miners.
Very good. Good homework, mate. Right, first up, big news out of the mining industry before we get into the headlines. K-Drill are no longer just RC drilling experts.
Hey,
they are now also surface diamond drilling experts. They have added two rigs to the fleet.
Wow.
So I'll tell you what, if you want some bloody diamond core ripped out of your ground to see if there's ore in it, K-Drill now have diamond drilling expertise, and mate, they got someone new on board.
Hang on,
mate.
This is a double big announcement.
Double big. There is shit going on everywhere at K-Drill. Talk about expansion. Welcome, Steve Swallow, new owner and director to K-Drill. He previously owned Sanders, MD at Sanderson Drilling.
Yep.
He was Diamond Drill General Manager at Orlando Drilling because there's no point getting more RC experts. Because you've got Ryan O'Sullivan already. So they've now complimented Ryan with, I guess, his diamond drilling equivalent.
He's a big name in the mining services, drilling scene, isn't he?
Big, Mr. Steve. Big name, mate. He's pretty pumped to be. I'm just going to show you a snippet and I'm going to show what was said on LinkedIn versus what was actually being said.
Tell me, Maddie.
Here we go.
Yeah.
What excites you most about the industry?
The fact that it's evolving very quickly. There's new technologies coming in.
New technology, pretty layman's explanation. By that, I've had a yarn to the company. These new technologies, he's come on board to K-Drill because he likes the innovation of Ryan O'Sullivan's bare hand drilling tech. So that's what he's actually meant by new drilling technologies. That's what's lured him to K-Drill. He feels like he can be a part of that. And you actually, because there was another video up, you can actually hear Ryan talking. Again, mundane, but from comment, I can tell you exactly what he's referring to here.
I know how we're going with that hole, how's it looking? Should we get, do you need some more holes, it's...
Now, when he says if you need some more holes... Like, because he gets pretty excited about it. He's involved in the thing. When you need some more holes, the rigs were maxed out. That's him offering his bare hands to actually get these holes sorted. Is there any other drilling company out there that can drill holes without having a rig like Ryan O'Sullivan?
Not that
can
I'm
for
aware
K-Drill?
Of, mate.
Not, nah. Nah, exactly. Nah. So
mate, he turns the dirt into just cheesecake and just goes...
Unbelievable. Now, so you've got the power of Ryan O'Sullivan. You also got pretty much Steve is going to swallow the competition. That's what he's bringing to the table.
I was wondering what you do with his name.
Look out. Look out, everyone. K-Drill are now diamond capable. So give them a buzz. Then they'll be looking for a contract for those two surface diamond rigs. Exciting times.
Great work, Maddie. K-Drill. Let's see how fast we can get those bloody diamond drill rigs, utilized, mate. Get in touch with Ryan O'Sullivan or... Steve Swallow.
Or me and I'll for John. That'll look real good. Righto, good stuff. Right, boys. Last week, Spartan, SPR, I think it's a three-way ding, ding, ding for us, all shareholders.
Correct.
Correct. So so they've raised 25 million bricks. Sort of unexpected. They did mention in the announcement earlier that week that they highlighted they did recapitalise the business with 18 months worth of funding. So this raise sort of come as a surprise. The share price came off in the days leading up to it. It was trading nearly 50 cents. I think it got up to 49, and then it did retrace to 39 on the back of their announcement with some updated drill holes. I thought it might have retraced because of the 0.28 metre headline of 1,000 plus grams. But so,
yeah,
7% shares on issue they raised, 25 million. So they're now at the 370 mil market cap.
Yeah, it was purely an insto raise as well. I mean, you can take what we all say with a pinch of salt, given the conflicts of interest, but they were pretty loud to promote that this was done at a premium raise, weren't they? There was no mention of a VWAP, no 5-day, no 10-day VWAP.
Premium to and, last,
I mean,
mate.
You wouldn't be surprised to wonder why, given that they can put those words premium. I was surprised that it was done at 40 cents. Mm. I was also partially surprised that it was 25 million. I was surprised on the right side there. I thought they might be tempted to do a bit more. But, I mean, the fact is that the stock was trading well over, like you said, Matty. I think it hit 48.5 or 49. Yep. The five-day VWAP would have been much higher. So it was definitely at a more normal discount on those metrics.
Yeah.
So if you look at them now, pretty cashed up, $53.2 million in the tin. They're looking to put out an MRE for Never Never.
An updated one.
Yeah, by December. So I think a lot of investors and people in the market will be keenly waiting for that and see what number comes out with that one. There was no timeline on completing a restart feasibility study, but they did say they got 6 rigs on site. They're doing a 32-kilometre drill program that's been extended. So
JD, I'm just curious, what are they using the money for, right? Because I remember way back at the start of the year, a lot of the commentary about Spartan was about putting in this exploration drill drive, and that would allow them to kind of drill out the underground potential of Never Never. Is that part of the use of funds here?
To get better angles and be able to drill the underground a bit deeper and with more confidence.
Exactly. And the exploration decline is no longer on the cards. They're, significantly more cashed up, even from when Simon came on the show and said that they wouldn't be raising or wouldn't need to look to raise by mid-24. That's obviously changed. But if we sort of scroll our eyes down on the use of funds, we can see $9 million intended to fund corporate costs.
Future corporate costs, and that's the transaction cost for this is
separate. That's separate. A $1.2 million. That's a standard 5-ish% of the $25 million. It's already gone.
So to be clear, this isn't 9 of the 25. This is basically adding, this is the pro forma cash balance.
Exactly.
How does that all get allocated? 9 is for corporate costs.
Yeah, that's right. So if you look at the corporate cost from FY23 in its entirety, that was obviously a pretty tumultuous year for the company doing the recapitalization and everything, but all up corporate costs were $5.4 million. I cannot understand why an exploration company would have corporate costs of $9 million. So, I mean, I'll need that one explained to me.
FY23, they obviously, they were mining for a portion of that as well.
They were, so, yeah.
But that $9 million, it's not explicitly saying that that's going to be this year's corporate cost. Is that saying for the money they've got, mm-hmm. however long that is going to last them, $9 million of that could be used.
$9 million's been earmarked. So you
could be
dead
10
right.
months, it could be 18 months, could be 24. We don't know. So
you
probably
still think of it
finances.
As like 17% of their current cash for corporate costs. Does that sound?
So what would fall under corporate costs? Would like feasibility studies fall under it? Takeover defence?
Nah. I mean, yes, but you pay a success fee on that. You don't pay a retainer that's substantial.
What else would fall under?
I mean, you're thinking things like, rent for the officers, travel expenses to send the team to, wherever they presented recently, Noosa, and those sorts of things, the exec, corporate compensation, those sorts of things, correct. Investor days to get people out to site to, from the sales side.
Director fees, office fit out.
Right, obviously wages as well, just wages across the whole company.
You could ASX fees, ASIC fees, but I mean, all those things are pretty marginal.
We need to get that one explained. I'm a bit baffled by that sort of number.
Long and the short, you'd want it to say you want more of that to go into drilling.
Absolutely.
Or bloody an exploration decline.
Yeah, and the one good thing I can say on it, Maddie, is that they broke it out on its own. They didn't, you know, say corporate and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's its own line item, which is good. It's just too big a line item, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talk about the exploration decline, like the pros and cons of if that went in or if it didn't. Obviously, putting the exploration, like say it was, you know, 1,000 metres worth of decline stockpiles, sumps and everything, what's that? It's going to cost about $12 million at this current market rate. It does get you deeper to drill. You can drill deeper. You get a better angle to drill the deeper areas with more confidence. But it's like in the investment case, what does it change? Would you rather surface more money going into surface drill rigs at the moment to define more loads? I think that's what I'd rather see than actually drilling deeper for something that might be bloody 4 or 5 years before you get down there.
Yeah, and I think that's the
way up between which path you take.
And I think that's the view the company has taken as well. That exploration decline would be focusing almost entirely on Never Never, whereas they want to put a lot of the money toward, you know, Inc. and all these other targets and, you know, lookalikes that they've identified around.
Yeah.
So that's...
I think you can use it, and obviously that's your decline that you use for the future underground mine, but you'd rather someone else to pay for it if they're going to take them out.
You would. on the theme of capital raisings, there was another one last week which has just come on the boards again today, Peninsula Energy. We've spoken about these poor sods in July when they had the deal with UEC pulled from them, and that, you know, that deal was for them to treat their loaded resins and produce yellow cake. So that just threw the company off. The share price got hit massively. Mm. It left them short on cash, essentially, with revenue much further into the future.
As a result, Peninsula would have to build their own back end of the plant, and they can't get early cash flows at the same time, and compounded by the fact that they had some obligations to deliver as part of their contractual arrangements with utilities.
Yeah.
At an earlier date than they could actually supply.
So it was an understandable reaction from the market when that news came out in July. They were whacked pretty heavily. So they've had to do a pretty chunky capital raising, $60 million. 50 is a placement, $10 million a share purchase plan. And that was done at a discount of around 32% to the 5-day VWAP. So that's
ouch.
Yeah, 7.5 cent price that was done at.
The dilution doesn't stop there though, JD.
No, it doesn't. So there was a 1-for-2 option with a 10 cent strike price. So they came out above the issue price, but significantly down. They're trading at about 8 cents. When I looked, they were down 30-odd%. So both those aspects of the capital raising will need shareholder approval. They've announced an EGM for January, so it'll be a little while before that cash comes in the door. They're targeting at the Lance Project a restart for December 2024. But I mean, in the scheme of things, you look at this company, you look at how uranium has done over the past 3 years, you know, uranium's moved from $25-$30 to $70-$75, and this company's in the same spot it was 3 years ago. So
the funding's really knocked it about, right? Because you'd expect that near-term production, it would be one of the, you know, best beneficiaries of rising uranium market. But unfortunately, the unfortunate event with UEC and the funding dynamics associated with that means that it hasn't at all been a beneficiary of the commodity rise. JD, there was one really interesting part of this, and you know, a big equity raising like this, really dilutive to the equity holders that were there before, etc. You'd really hope that they're, you know, fully funded from this point.
You would, wouldn't you? And it's a bit deceiving the way they word this. So they say they're funded to first production. They also said this in May of this year. So, but the way is, you know, like I said, somewhat deceiving. So after the capital raise, they will still need further funding despite being funded to first production. So they say that they're eyeing debt and prepayments for, you know, uranium production in the future. So
they're funded to first production, but they're not funded to positive cash flow is what you're saying.
Exactly. So yeah, anticipate, I mean, from back of the envelope, US 30 million at least needed to get them to that level. They put it out in a chart you can see. And if you assume that this funding will get away okay, they would need another roughly US 30 million bucks to get them to sustainable positive cash flow.
Hopefully they can achieve that. Yeah. With like the debt or prepayment, something that's, yeah, not as dilutive to the equity holders as this current raise.
Absolutely. And to be consistent, as we were with Spartan, on the use of funds, $7.5 million in corporate and exploration costs.
That's US.
That is. And they are two different items. Exploration should be separate from corporate so we can see what the corporate costs are. So that was just one last comment I had on that one.
So their corporate and exploration is just a little bit more than Spartan's corporate alone. It's
US dollars, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Guys, Glencore,
getting
busy in lithium, which is fascinating because they had been vocal at times over the past couple of years that, you know, there wasn't a big enough market for them to, you know, create the margins and the profits that would entice them.
We've seen two offtake deals with Glencore and lithium developers in the last week, which I think are worth talking about and worth having a chat about what it means for Glencore more broadly. The first one I want to talk about is a deal with Galan. This was announced Thursday last week. On the news, Galan closed up 8%.
What did they do the day before?
But it ran 17% the day before that.
Oh.
So the deal was Glencore to provide US $70 to $100 million prepayment facility to Galan. Glencore will accept offtake for Galan's lithium chloride product from its HMW project in Argentina. Galan will provide 100% of its phase one production, which is estimated to be about 5,400 tonnes of LCE in lithium chloride concentrate per annum for the first 5 years of production. And the price isn't properly broken down, but it's set in reference to an index, less marketing fee, discount and penalties. I think it's also of interest, you know, there's some commentary in the announcement about no requirement for Galan to secure an export line. So it appears Glencore will toll treat the product to produce lithium carbonate in country before being exported. Side note, Galan's project is obviously in Argentina. Breaking news today, the far right, in quotation marks, presidential candidate has won the election there. So I wonder what the implications that event could have on foreign investment and mining developments in the country more broadly.
He's got any intel on the Argentina political?
I can't say I've been following it with close eyes.
No, yeah. Neither, Jada. You'd know that shit.
I can just, he won 55% of the voting overall, and he was very vocal on wanting to cut down inflation in the country. Like, inflation has just ravaged the country. I think it's running, last time I saw it, 140%.
Jeez.
So granted, I do think all the politicians were saying that. Nobody wants inflation, but watch this space.
The other one that popped up in addition to the Galan deal that we saw was one that probably isn't on most people's radars just by virtue of the exchange that it's listed on. It's called Tantalex. So this company is listed on the Canadian Securities Exchange. That's not the TSX, not the TSXV, the CSX. So $68 million fully diluted market cap the company has in Canadian dollars. They've got a lithium tin and tantalum tailings project called Monono.
Mm.
Sound familiar?
The Monono?
Sure does, mate.
The Monono indeed. So very close, as you can see in this picture, to the Monono in the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah, right. What, about 10 Ks away or something?
Yeah. You can see a little dot there. Super. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So it's really, really close. It's the tailings. Is how I think about it. So the deal with Glencore. So Glencore have agreed to an offtake with a CapEx contribution, plus they agreed to provide them with a US $5 million convertible. Here's the key terms, right? So Glencore get 100% of the lithium from the tailings project. Glencore contributes 1/3 of the CapEx of the project, subject to some conditions. Total CapEx is about US $150 million. Now then there's that US $5 million convertible. This is the bit I don't like. Interest accrues at a rate with a margin that's not specified. Conversions at Glencore's discretion. There's a pricing mechanism that could occasionally have a conversion price actually at a discount. I'd rather have seen a $5 million placement to Glencore to best align interests of Tantalex and Glencore. But I think it's interesting, right? We see these two deals in the last week where Glencore's basically, you know, getting into the lithium commodity trading game in some ways.
Is this coincidence they're into this one just 10 Ks from AVZ?
Oh, mate, it could be.
Getting into the area.
The people that run Tantalex are former commodity traders, so I don't know. They might just have connections in the commodity trading business and be playing into that. But
yeah. Another dart from Maddie on the board. Thanks, Money Mourners. Watch this space.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, on that theme, there was an announcement from AVZ as well that they'd signed a funding facility for US $20 million. This is quite an interesting one, but it's with a group called Lock Capital. And what these guys, you know, essentially do is they fund litigation expenses. So the funding's not certain yet. They're going to do DD and assess whether they want to, you know, ultimately put that money toward AVZ. But interesting, nevertheless, to see that funding that we'd seen with AVZ, which was running low by the quarter at an alarmingly quick rate, was looking like it's going to get topped up again. So we'll see if that gets confirmed.
Righto, next cab off the rank. We've got a guest for this one. So there was reporting out, was it last week or the week before, about the news coming out of America that there was possibly going to be a free trade agreement between US and Indonesia, which would mean, so the class 2 nickel laterites out of Indonesia would become IRA compliant. Yep. Have I summarised that correctly, boys?
Yeah, and I mean, Joe Biden met with Jokowi, the nickname for the leader of Indonesia as well, hence the articles were getting more and more prominent regarding a potential free trade agreement.
Yeah, right.
We're going straight to the source, mate.
Yeah, straight to the source, bugger trying to research it ourselves. So Todd Milan, he's been on the show before. He was in town specifically to see us, as we mentioned it before. Right, let's rip to the chat with him. He explains the whole thing. Let's get into it. Righto, here he is, Money Miners, Todd Milan.
Hey, mate.
Hey.
Thanks for dropping in on your 1 day you got in Perth, maybe half a day.
1 day only.
I'm looking forward to a beer with you at 4 p.m., but you managed to you know, get you in here for a quick 10-minute cameo. I've had a lot of people, or heard a lot of people talking about the potential for Indonesia to become eligible for the IRA in terms of its nickel that's coming out of there. It's obviously changing the cost curve dynamics. And a lot of people are talking about this potential free trade agreement that might occur between the US and Indonesia. I feel like there's a lot of mixed messaging out there. There's different sources reporting. People don't quite understand the nuance. But, mate, you being close to the ground in Washington, what's going on? Is Indonesia going to get a free trade agreement with the US?
Well, obviously, in some respects, talking my own book a little bit here. But on the other hand, from a person who lives in Washington and talks to the people in the administration, people in Congress, in the OEM community quite a bit, you know, I think it's very clear coming out of the meeting between President Biden and President Jokowi, there's a lot of work to be done. There is not going to be a free trade agreement in place anytime soon. For a bunch of different reasons, and some of those reasons have been articulated by people that are opposed to it in Congress around a number of environmental or labor or human rights issues. And so I think the headline of that meeting is the Indonesians didn't get a deal, and they're not going to get a deal for the foreseeable future. And that means that Indonesian nickel isn't going to qualify in the IRA mineral requirements of Section 30D, which is the, you know, $7,500 tax credit per vehicle. So I think that creates in the market, you know, people have to start to do their homework a little bit better and actually understand the fact that there is this big gate in front of Indonesian nickel getting into the IRA qualifications. I think the next thing you're going to see is the foreign entity of concern rules coming out probably before Christmas. That'll again create a problem around Chinese-owned entities supplying into the IRA supply chain.
Totally.
Where'd the hype start? Well, how did this come about? Who's driving it from the policy side in America?
Is this lobbying from
– Is it lobbying or
– Well, you know, I mean, obviously the Indonesians, as a strategic partner of the United States, would like to be qualified. There's lots of countries that would like to have that free trade agreement qualification, but they're not really taking the time to understand how long it took a country like Australia to qualify for a free trade agreement. So it's not just, you know, you can't flip a switch and qualify for a free trade agreement. You actually have to have a rigorous and open investment regime. You have to be able to give U.S. exporters access to your country. We can't just have a one-way deal, a sweetheart deal with Indonesia. So there are these big trade policy issues as well that stand in the way of a deal. it's possible that they could get there, but this is many years to get to a place where you'd have a free trade agreement that would qualify for the IRA.
Todd, while we've got you, so the answer is no, no free trade agreement with Indonesia and the US, nothing to worry about there. But while we've got you, so these incentives from the IRA in terms of that value add sort of test, they kind of kick in, if I'm not wrong, 31st of December or is it the 1st of January next year or something like that?
Yeah.
What are you expecting to look out for as those thresholds kind of kick in and the incentives kind of flow through?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that we're going to look for is this rule around the foreign entity of concern, because that's going to actually set how much of current supply chains that have some touch point with China actually have to be redone or undone. So I think that's going to actually make for a lot of work for the OEMs in 2024. I think that, you know, each of the auto companies have to warrant that their vehicle qualifies for the tax credit. And so you're going to see in 2024 people making calls on which of their vehicles actually start to qualify. So between 2024 and 2025, you could see some shifting in what people say actually qualify. And that's going to be based on where they're sourcing their materials from and how it qualifies.
Well, yeah, I guess just to sum it up, Todd, if that did happen for the money miners that aren't as astute in the finance world, if this did come into play, it would pretty much turn upside down the global nickel supply if the bulk tonnage is coming out of class two nickel laterites, then your class one nickel sulfides won't be seen as a premium product anymore. Is that the implications of this?
Yeah, I mean, from my view, it's as simple as, you know, the sleep well at night move for OEMs is going to be to source nickel from the current qualified countries that have nickel reserves: Australia, Canada, the United States. It's as simple as that.
Right. What, you got anything else that's going to knock our socks off before you go, Todd? You know, you got a lunch to go to, mate.
No, just watch out for the foreign entity of concern. I think when we get that before Christmas, I think maybe that'll wake up the market a little bit, that the details matter, and that how different sources of supply are going to be qualified or unqualified for the incentives in the U.S., which are so extraordinary. Well, so,
mate, it'll be coming out on the news, mate. We'll deliver it to the money miners.
We might be on holiday then.
Live from the beach.
Yeah, no, we're working all the way through Christmas. Yeah.
Sure. We'll report in the new year.
Beauty, Todd. Thanks for popping in, mate. Come at 4:30 next time so we can crack a tin. Good on you, copper.
Cheers, Todd.
Okay, see ya.
Righto, there's everything you need to know.
Hey, mate. So I listened to the MinRes AGM. I think it was on Thursday. We didn't talk about it on Thursday. I think we uploaded an episode with Sammy Berridge. And it's a bit old news now. I did a bit of a tweet thread on it. So if anyone wants to know what my takeaways were, Chris Ellison gave some really, really punchy views. He covered everything from Brian versus Hard Rock, you know, talk about their gas ambitions, some government lobbying baked into the presentation, some comments on Azure, on Wildcat, talked about succession planning, talked about the lithium strategy, talked about Bald Hill. There was a lot, right? So if anyone wants to know the TLDR version of my takeaways, which is a bit old news now, then you can check it out on Twitter. But there's a part that I'm keen to show
the
money miners today.
Are you trying to get more Twitter followers here? Is this a call to action, Trav?
At Trav Money Mine.
I don't know if I want you to have too many Twitter followers.
The part I'm keen to show the money miners, however, is this one question from the Q&A. You guys ready for this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Go.
Oliver Stevens, you've obviously done a wonderful job, you and your team, over a long time. And no doubt many, many people are telling you this. It strikes me one of the biggest risks might be hubris. So how do you and your board guard against that being an issue?
Sorry, about what?
Hubris. How do you guard against that sort of becoming an issue for the business?
Yeah, I might pass that to James.
Thank you.
Am I on? Yep. Look, it's actually a good question. It's something we actually ask ourselves. And I think, you know, in having the capacity to ask the question as to whether, you know, we become overconfident about our delivery and execution, I think means that we're actually conscious of the issue and take steps to address it. So, you know, I think the board plays a very significant role in that. We certainly challenge Chris and the management team at different times. So,
anyone else?
I don't think Chris Allison needed. I think he knew the definition of hubris, right? How do you guard against hubris? Sorry, what? I think he knew the definition, and then he stares at him until he asks the question again, and then he palms the question off to the chairman, James McClements, as he sort of responds and says, he says, "We definitely push back on Chris if you listen closely." Now watch Chris Allison's body language and watch James McClements' body language. He's saying, "We definitely challenge Chris." Meanwhile, Chris leans over James, gets a drink on him, and James, he looks nervous. You know, like the overlord's on top of me right now. it's just an amazing question, amazing bit of footage, and I think it tells you so much with so little.
And James McClements is no chum either. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
His hubris, I fucking didn't even know what it meant, to be honest.
Opposite of humility.
As AGMs go, that is one of the more fascinating ones I've watched in a long time. It's a fascinating business. The dynamics, the lack of using the word "we" and constantly using the word "I" throughout the presentation from Chris was noticeable. And there's so many other layers about the business. I mean, the returns he highlighted were just astounding. 33% since listing per annum total shareholder return.
Since it says, so that's since IPO, was
since
it?
IPO in 2006.
Yeah.
I mean, that, yeah.
That's pretty bloody good, isn't it?
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. So speaking of AGMs, guys, I've got a bit of a comment to make about them. We're going to head to a few AGMs over the coming weeks, and had a legendary money miner pop in today who obviously heard the fact that we intend to attend the Delta Lithium AGM, and he wants to make sure that we had the ability to ask whatever question we want and vote in accordance with how we read the play. So without us actually having to fork up money and buy some Delta Lithium shares, he's kindly come up with the idea that he can nominate us as his proxy to vote his shares at the AGM.
We are proxy advisors.
Because he's working, I think. But yeah. No, sorry, it was specifically for that.
I love the creativity. I think it's a wicked idea. If anyone else wants to sort of, we're going to see how this goes. I think it'll be fun. And if anyone else, you know, wants the Money Mine team to, you know, attend the AGM as your proxy, then we'd be on it.
Well, I think the takings from this episode are follow @TravMoneyAndMine on Twitter and give Trav all your proxy forms. Yeah. Nominate Trav as a proxy for all your shareholdings. He loves this shit. I am not lying.
Awesome, gents.
I'm probably just going to go to the pub, but you can help out Trav.
What if Chris Allison's at the AGM, mate?
He can come have a beer with me whenever he wants. Beauty. Good stuff, boys.
Yeah, a couple of sponsors
as
to thank.
As always. So I'm going to read them backwards today. K-Drill at the top of the show, the new home of Steve Swallow. Brooks Airways, JP Search, KCA Site Services, Anytime Exploration Services, Futureproof Consulting, McMahon Mining Title Services, MMTS, Terra Capital, and DSI Underground.
Beauty. Hooteroo, lads.
Good stuff. Hooteroo. Money Miners. Go Australia!
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.